From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
Today, the committee starts consideration of the most awesome power constitutionally vested in the House of Representatives.
That's Republican Congressman Edward Hutchinson of Michigan on May 9th, 1974, kicking off the House Judiciary Committee's public hearings on the impeachment of President Richard Nixon. In 1998, Americans watched the impeachment hearings for President Bill Clinton. And this week, for the third time, Americans will watch that, quote, most awesome power yet again, as the House Intelligence Committee prepares to question key witnesses in the impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump. Now, transcripts from closed-door depositions are already out there, but televised hearings like these are designed to reach to convince the public, and therefore politics, strategy, and spin will jostle for as much attention as the facts. This hour on Point, a look ahead at the public phase of the impeachment inquiry. And you can join us. Do you think anything you might hear in this week's hearings could change your mind about the impeachment inquiry? What will you be watching for? What do you want to hear? What questions do you want to have answered? Join us anytime on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, joining us today from Washington is Paula Reed, CBS News correspondent covering the Justice Department, the White House, and legal affairs. Paula, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much. Thrilled to be with you.
It's great to have you. Also with us from Washington as well is Emma Dumaine. She covers Congress and congressional leadership for McClatchy. Emma, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Paula, let's just start with you. We've got the first set of public hearings coming up on Wednesday, specifically Bill Taylor. Take us through what we might hear on Wednesday.
That's right. You're going to hear from two witnesses. This is going to be a panel with two folks sitting side by side. The first is Bill Taylor. He's the top U.S. diplomat in Ukraine. And alongside him will be George Kent. He's a State Department official. Now, for both of these men, we kind of have a preview of what it is they've already told lawmakers, which is a good roadmap for what we expect to hear on Wednesday. Bill Taylor has arguably been the most significant witness so far. I mean, his opening statement was considered pretty explosive as it corroborated many of the claims made by the initial whistleblower. He also provided testimony about the events around the withholding of military aid and, of course, the July 25th phone call between the president and his Ukrainian counterpart. Now, George Kent, he is a really important witness when it comes to the role of the president's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Mm-hmm. He has testified that Giuliani waged this, quote, campaign of slander against the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch. And he's the one who can really shed a lot of light on how Giuliani was working behind the scenes. So it's an interesting pair that they've chosen to kick off these hearings. But it will be interesting to hear how they answer questions now that they're no longer behind closed doors. And really, now they're telling the story to the American people.
Right. So, Emma, as Paula said, I mean, Bill Taylor's testimony that we have so far, you know, he goes out of his way to outline what essentially is that shadow foreign policy that he says was being run by Rudy Giuliani regarding Ukraine. But with these public hearings, what do you think Democratic members of the committee are going to try to do? What's the most important question or the most important piece of information they're going to try to communicate to the public?
What Democrats really want from these public hearings is they want the public to hear people like William Taylor say very explicitly that he thinks there was a quid pro quo, that the Trump administration was trying to extract a promise to investigate the Bidens in exchange for military foreign assistance. William Taylor you know, said pretty strongly during his deposition in the transcript that we've seen that this was the case. They want to hear him say it in as many ways as possible on live television for everyone to hear. It's one thing to have it written down in a deposition that you may or may not have had the time to read hundreds of pages over the course of a weekend, like Paula and I have been doing with our spare time. Yeah, this is a chance to hear it from his mouth. And that's what they really want to see.
Okay, so on that point, let's listen to what some Republicans have been saying over the weekend about what they anticipate hearing during during these hearings. goodness gracious, it's only Monday. But here's Senator Ron Johnson, a Wisconsin Republican. He's the chair of the Senate Homeland Security Committee. He was talking to Jake Tapper on CNN yesterday, and Tapper asked about testimony from administration officials in which they asserted that when President Trump referred to withholding aid to, quote, you know, quote unquote, fight corruption in Ukraine, that it was assumed he was talking about investigating Joe Biden. And here is what Senator Johnson said.
That's their impression. I've never heard the president say, you know, I want to dig up dirt on a potential 2020 opponent. You know, what I've always heard the president consistently concerned about is what happened in 2016. Why did this, you know, how did this false narrative of Russian collusion with my campaign occur? Why was I strapped with a special counsel?
So Paula Reid, respond to that, because this is what we've been hearing over the past several days, that Republicans, some of them seem to be moving towards it was a quid pro quo, but not a quid pro quo.
Right. Exactly. I believe the president tweeted, no quo. You can't have a quid pro quo. That is not a robust defense, specifically in anywhere, but especially when you're dealing with something this significant, an impeachment proceeding. And the problem for the Republicans is as they try to walk this line between respecting the process and defending the president is never satisfied. He wants people to go out and say his call was perfect. He has done nothing wrong. And anything short of that, he feels is not enough, that the Republicans who don't do that are not doing enough. But they're caught in a tough spot here because the evidence is mounting. We now have five former officials, top officials, testifying that there was a quid pro quo. And when it comes to this idea of, well, there's one thing he said in this one call, this impeachment inquiry is about a lot more than that. While the whistleblower's initial complaint focused on the call and questions of a possible cover-up, now that we've heard from all of these witnesses, or lawmakers have heard from these witnesses, we've heard from some of them, we're seeing that it was a much broader campaign that was being launched mostly by the president's personal attorney, but some of his other allies, including possibly his chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney. There are all these other players who are working behind the scenes in what appears to be a coordinated effort to dangle either aid or presidential visits over Ukraine in this effort to pressure them. So it's not enough to just say, oh, let's look at the semantics of this call. It's a much broader conspiracy that's being alleged here.
Well, so the president just tweeted yesterday, quote, the call to the Ukrainian president was perfect, all caps on perfect. Read the transcript. There was nothing said that was in any way wrong. Republicans, don't be led into the fool's trap of saying it was not perfect, but is not impeachable. No, it is much stronger than that. Nothing was done wrong. End quote. Now, Emma, reflect on that. You see the president there in his tweet warning Republicans, like, don't even start saying that the call wasn't perfect there. Respond to that.
Yeah. You know, I think what Paula is saying is absolutely correct, that this is much broader than the phone call. You have witnesses coming into the House Intelligence Committee, three of whom will be in public testimony this week, saying that there were other forces at play. There were other strategies being deployed, allegedly, outside of this July 25th phone call. And Republicans are going to be forced to respond to all of those other complaints about, allegations that the president's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, was trying to hijack the Ukraine policy, that Mick Mulvaney was working behind the scenes to try to extract the promise of investigating a corruption by the Bidens in exchange for foreign aid. It is outside the scope of this phone call. But you know, to your point, in playing the Ron Johnson clip, this is something that Republicans are already struggling with. They can't deny that there are other allegations and there are other narratives being put into the public domain right now. They can't just skip to the transcript. So they are finding ways in this very ad hoc, sort of by the seat of their pants kind of process, saying, oh, well, Just because it doesn't look great doesn't mean it was illegal. Or just because we're hearing that there was a quid pro quo doesn't mean if nobody said quid pro quo, then who are we to assume that it was actually vocalized as some sort of threat or some sort of attempt of a bribe? The White House announced last week that they were bringing on Tony Saig and Pam Bondi to be these new sort of senior communicators, mm-hmm. to be the sort of clearinghouse to help congressional Republicans all get on the same page, all stay on the same message, because what we're seeing right now is, like I said, sort of this ad hoc struggle to, every man and woman for himself or herself to try to cobble together some sort of defense that can help explain away what we're seeing in these testimonies, trying to reconcile that with the defense of the president. And it's becoming very difficult.
So, Paula, we just have a minute before we have to take a quick break here. But I hear what Emma's saying, but is it, even if it is ad hoc, isn't one of the potential avenues of success for Republican members of Congress is to actually make this as complicated as possible? Because Democrats are going to be trying to craft Absolutely. A clear, simple narrative here, aren't they?
Yeah, and the speed at which Democrats have pursued this has certainly helped Republicans. Look, if voters don't understand what it is you're talking about and what it is you're voting on, you're going to lose. You are not going to be successful. So if Republicans can just sow a few seeds of doubt, or at a very minimum, just sow a lot of confusion politically, that may be their best strategy.
Well, we are talking this hour about the public hearings in the impeachment inquiry that's currently going on in the House that is set to begin on Wednesday. There will be another round of hearings, public hearings on Friday. And we want to know what you think. What do you want to hear from the public testimony? What kind of questions do you want to have asked? Do you think anything you might hear in this public phase of the impeachment inquiry could change your mind? We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the public phase of the impeachment inquiry, which is set to begin on Wednesday and with more public hearings, more public testimony on Friday before the House Intelligence Committee. And we want to know what you think. Do you think hearing in a public format from folks who have already provided closed-door depositions is going to change your opinion on the impeachment inquiry? Do you think it'll have any effect on the public's overall sense as to what actually happened regarding President Trump's White House and Ukraine policy? I'm joined today by Paula Reed. She's CBS News correspondent covering the Justice Department, the White House, and legal affairs. Emma Dumain is also with us. She covers Congress and congressional leadership for McClatchy. Now, let's listen to a moment here from Congressman Eric Swalwell, California Democrat, who's on the House Intelligence Committee. He was on CBS's Face the Nation yesterday talking about this public stage of the impeachment inquiry.
It's important that the president has due process, and evidence is not a conclusion. We have enough evidence from the depositions that we've done to warrant bringing this forward, evidence of an extortion scheme using taxpayer dollars to ask a foreign government to investigate the president's opponent. But it's important that these witnesses raise their right hands and take questions from both Republicans and Democrats. The president is going to get that.
That's Congressman Eric Swalwell on CBS's Face the Nation just yesterday. Senator Rand Paul, Republican from Kentucky, talked about the impeachment inquiry on NBC's Meet the Press.
I think it's a big mistake for anybody to argue quid pro quo. It didn't have quid pro quo, and I know that's what the administration's arguing. I wouldn't make that argument. I would make the argument that every politician in Washington, other than me virtually, is trying to manipulate Ukraine to their purposes. Menendez tried it. Murphy tried it. Biden tried it. Trump's tried it. They're all doing it.
Senator Rand Paul on NBC's Meet the Press yesterday. Paula Reed, what do you make of what Rand Paul is saying there, other than the fact that he claims to be the only non-corrupt politician in Washington?
How convenient. Well, let's make the distinction here. The issue with trying to pressure a foreign government to investigate your political rival is that it runs afoul of campaign finance laws. The campaign finance laws say that you cannot accept anything of value from a foreign government. And lest anyone forget, we just went through about a 2-year investigation into whether President Trump's presidential campaign received anything of value from Russia. Now, the special counsel cleared the president and his campaign on that question, but here we are once again looking at the same exact issue. And so while the senator is trying to argue that everyone pressures Ukraine to bend to their political will, there is a political and a legal distinction between trying to get Ukraine on board with your U.S. policy, your worldview, and trying to get them to help you in a campaign. Now, it's important to note, the Justice Department, when they looked at the whistleblower complaint, they said they couldn't determine the value of investigating the Bidens, and therefore they decided not to pursue a criminal investigation. That's an important note, because that's why they argue that they didn't look at this from through a criminal lens. But at the core, that is the difference between pressuring Ukraine, as the senator says, saying, hey, we want you to do X, Y, and Z as it relates to Russia. We want you to do X, Y, and Z as it relates to whatever in the South China Sea. Who knows, right? Any sort of foreign policy. That is different than saying, I want you to investigate my political rival. Because once you do that, you are bringing them into the U.S. political system. And some argue that is a crime.
Well, so, Emma, I wonder if this is something that we're going to be hearing a lot, specifically with Bill Taylor's testimony, because I remember from his opening statement during his depositions, he talked specifically about how he felt some of these actions were undermining longstanding U.S. policy in Ukraine, and the hot war that Ukraine is currently engaged with against Russia. And so, could we potentially try to hear Democrats question Taylor a lot about that it's not just quid pro quo, but also that, were the president's actions actually in opposition to U.S. interests?
Yeah, that's right. I think you will. I think that, the challenge for Democrats, and this was an important point that Paula was making before the break, mm-hmm. was about, how to keep things Republicans trying to make things complicated while Democrats are trying to streamline everything as one potential strategy here. I think that Democrats do want to keep this as straightforward as possible. I think that Democrats it might be at their disadvantage to try to get too much into the weeds of policy and law and, all of the sort of the machinations that, a presidential administration could go through here. I think that it is important, however, for Democrats to try to make the case that there were potentially areas of misconduct outside of the realm of the transcript, which is how Republicans are trying to steer things sort of, back to, what was in the transcript of that phone call. So, yeah, I think that, that will come up. And I think that the challenge for everybody will be to try to make their case as sort of succinct and streamlined as possible.
Right. Paula, it makes me wonder, though, that if as we keep returning to this fact that a lot of these public hearings, one of the main points is so that the public gets to hear this and the political exercise around that, around trying to shape public opinion here. And, could Democrats potentially think that it would be fruitful to emphasize in part that that there are members of the government who felt that what the president was doing was bad for the United States. It was undermining longstanding U.S. policy. So again, more than just a transactional quid pro quo question, but this bigger sense of, was the president operating in the best interests of the nation that he leads?
Absolutely. And were you using taxpayer resources for your own ends? And that's been a question that has dogged this administration from the outset. But Republicans have an advantage here. Like I said, mm-hmm. Democrats have moved really quickly here, mm-hmm. right, really fast. All of this has happened in about 2 months. I mean, I cover this day in and day out. I'm paid to read these transcripts, and I find it challenging to keep up with all the news that is coming out. So the challenge for Democrats is to try to lay this out in a way that the American people understand what happened, understand what the allegations are, and that they believe that this is conduct that rises to the level of an impeachment. Because if Democrats can't do that, this could seriously backfire on them in 2020. And I think Republicans, really, their best strategy is just to try to sow doubt, sow confusion, draw this process out, try to come up with a sideshow, as they are trying to do by calling their own witnesses. But a lot's happened in a short period of time, and I'm not sure the average American who's working, supporting a family, they're busy, they're distracted, really understands what it is that transpires and why it is that it matters.
So, Emma, Paula brought up a really important point I want to explore with both of you for a second, because who has the GOP, who have Republicans put on their requested witness list? I mean, I'm seeing a couple interesting names. Hunter Biden, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. The whistleblower. Mm-hmm. is another mm-hmm. one they want to call. What's interesting about their list is there's, you know, the reaches, you know, the ones where, you know, Adam Schiff, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, is going to say, he's not going to call the whistleblower. He's not going to call Hunter Biden. He's not going to call Nellie Orr, who's the former contractor for Fusion GPS, which commissioned part of the so-called Steele dossier that became, that tried to dig up dirt on Trump that, you know, House and Senate Republicans think should have been the subject of more of a criminal investigation into Democrat efforts to influence the 2016 campaign. Democrats are not going to let those people come and be witnesses for this inquiry. But Republicans do have some other ideas. For instance, they want... I'm looking at my notes because, as Paula said, this is a lot to keep track
yes.
of. You should see my notes here. They have Kurt Volker, who's the former U.S. Special Representative to Ukraine, who said that Giuliani was a conduit to the Ukraine mm-hmm. And asked for investigations into the Bidens. The GOP actually wants Kurt Volker to come testify the same day on the same panel as William Taylor and George Kent. I think Republicans must think that someone like Kurt Volker is more perhaps sympathetic to the narrative Republicans are trying to tell, which is, you know, this is hearsay. People weren't necessarily in the room on the calls. They must think that Volker is someone who could neutralize the fairly potentially damning testimony that or the potentially damning narratives that Kent and Taylor can tell. Along those lines, you have someone like Tim Morrison, who Republicans would like to call. Democrats haven't said yet whether they would have Tim Morrison, the former senior director for European and Russian affairs. They haven't said whether they want to call him as a Democratic witness. But Republicans really like him because he listened in on this July 25th phone call with Volodymyr Zelensky and said that he didn't think that Trump said anything or suggested anything illegal.
Uh-huh.
That's really important because one of the Republican lines here is it may have been inappropriate, it may have been not a great look, but nothing that happened on that phone call constitutes an impeachable offense. So they want him to testify. Those are some examples. So they're shooting for the moon, but they're putting some other people out on their list too who, you know, would be more perhaps more palatable for Democrats to accept.
Well, let's just play a little bit of tape here from Representative Jackie Speier, California Democrat, who was on ABC's This Week over the weekend, talking specifically about why she doesn't think it's necessary for the whistleblower to testify.
Well, the whistleblower actually provided a document. He was third hand. We have Colonel Vindman, who was actually on the call, who will be in a position, I think, to testify. And so you have a much more direct person to speak to about the events. And you have the actual transcript that the president himself provided that is corroboration.
Paula, about Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, do we know if he is going to participate in these public hearings? Probably not this week, but do we know about in future weeks?
It's possible. And I believe his attorney has said that he would be willing to testify publicly. Very notable yesterday on Face the Nation, though, the president's national security advisor, Robert O'Brien, was asked about Lieutenant Colonel Vindman because he is detailed to the National Security Council. And Margaret Brennan, the host, asked about his job security and whether he would face any retaliation. And O'Brien's answer was pretty interesting. He suggested that they're going to downsize the National Security Council and that people will sort of be pushed out. Now, I've spoken with Vindman's lawyer. He says that so far his client is still on the National Security Council. His detail is not over until July 2020. But that's something to watch very closely because Vindman has been such a significant witness in this. If there's any suggestion that perhaps there's retaliation or maybe the threat of retaliation for cooperating, that's something that I'm really watching as we go forward, because I do expect that he may be one of the other witnesses that are called to testify publicly in the coming weeks.
Interesting. Paula, piggybacking on what Emma was saying a little earlier about the other people that the GOP wants to call to testify, we have a comment here that's coming on our website from Brett. And Brett says, if the GOP would like to interview Hunter Biden or Hunter Biden's colleagues, I see no reason in the world why Schiff should disallow it. It's my understanding, however, that this request will be denied. What is he afraid of? Schiff very likely knows that he has little to lose and actually has much more to gain when he demonstrates such fairness and objectivity. What do you think, Paula?
Well, the concern is a sideshow, right? The question here is, was the president pressuring his foreign counterpart to help him in an election? Hunter Biden is one piece of that. And there are legitimate questions about how the heck Hunter Biden got this job in Ukraine, making all this money with no experience. But that's Hunter Biden's qualifications for board seats are not really what this impeachment investigation is predicated on. The president of the United States is very concerned with those questions. He believes that his children, if they have profited while he's been in office, they are immediately criticized. And he believes there's a double standard. And that's something that hits a very deep nerve with the president. He takes this very personally. He believes his family, his business, his presidency has been held to a different standard. So this is very personal for the president. And some of his allies would like to put Hunter Biden into the mix here, change their narrative, focus on Hunter Biden and how he profited from his father's position as vice president. But that's not what Adam Schiff wants. Adam Schiff wants focus. He wants to try to craft a narrative, something that arguably they have not done as successfully as they could have, and try to lay the story out for the American people without these distractions, without the sideshow.
Well, let's go to a quick call here. Let's go to Mary Lisa, who's calling from Shawano, Wisconsin. Mary Lisa, you're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to thank you for your show and call in to say that what I would like to see in these hearings is for especially the Republican Congress people to stand up and straighten their backs and stop doing this duck and weave political spinning at the bidding of the president and do their jobs. And if they're not going to do their jobs with the integrity of the office, then the public should be able to see and hopefully not vote them back into office, because it's a denigration to our democracy and our congressional representation and what it's supposed to be.
Mary Lisa, thank you so much for your call. Emma Dumaine, we've got about a minute to go before the break here. What do you think about what Mary Lisa was saying here? Could potentially these hearings have some blowback on the members of Congress themselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, public opinion is shifting or is, moving in different directions on whether there is overwhelming public sentiment for impeachment. Last I saw it was, I think the country was divided on whether mm-hmm. they wanted Congress to pursue impeachment proceedings and whether they believe the president should be impeached. I think that, you know, the result of these public hearings could be that the public sentiment and support of impeachment begins to grow, in which case the public and voters would want their representatives to turn against the president if necessary. On the other hand, these public hearings could not go the way that Democrats want them to go, and public support for impeachment could dissipate, and it could still become very partisan, as it already is. It could become more partisan. So, you know, these next few days are going to be really telling.
Yeah, well, we've got a comment coming in on the website. Someone calling themselves Everybody Has One says, realistically, no matter how damning the evidence, 99.9% of Americans will never read 2,700 pages of depositions. 99.4% won't read 100 pages. If they won't read the book, maybe they'll watch the show or at least a few episodes. So we'll take a bunch more callers when we come back. We're talking about what we're likely to hear in the public phase of the impeachment inquiry beginning this week. We'll be back. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the new phase in the impeachment inquiry, and that is public hearings, which are set to start on Wednesday and again on Friday. We're speaking this hour with Paula Reed. She's CBS News correspondent covering the Justice Department, the White House, and legal affairs. Emma Dumain is also with us. She covers Congress and congressional leadership for McClatchy. They're both with us from Washington. Let's go to Richard, who's calling from Richmond, Virginia. Richard, you're on the air.
God bless you. Thank you for everything you do for us. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, but go ahead, Richard.
Thank
Sorry.
Thank you so much. I'll keep it brief. Again, we really appreciate you giving us a platform. I'm a 24-year veteran in the military, and today on Veterans Day, I would like to use your platform to remind everybody that for two centuries, more than two centuries, people in uniform have put their lives on the line to defend our Constitution. And all I want is for every Republican member of Congress, the upper house and the lower house, to simply abide by the Constitution that every member of the military in all branches have fought for centuries. And get this man out of office. He's a five-decade-long felon. We don't need to keep arguing about what quid pro quo, for crying out loud. Every veteran and everybody that supports and loves the veterans needs to watch Congress and just get them to abide by the Constitution. Mm. That's a very simple premise.
Hey, Richard, first, don't hang up yet. Don't hang up. Thank you for calling, Richard. But let me ask you, I mean, I would imagine that the Republican members of Congress, if they were to hear you, and hopefully they do hear you saying this, they would say they are defending the Constitution. They many of them say see the whole impeachment inquiry as unconstitutional. I mean, that's one of their lines here.
That's a shame. It's a shame that Colonel Lindsey Graham is now doing what he's doing and acting the way he's acting. It's a shame that all these people who we trust are using so many different excuses to try to avoid what everybody out here can see is obvious. Bill Clinton was impeached for covering up an indiscretion, and that's it. Richard Nixon would have been impeached for covering up a break-in. Those two things are simple. Mm. This man has been committing felonies in and out of his office since the 70s. Yeah. The Trump Management Company in 1973 for right. doing what they did to minorities with their buildings that they're trying to rent out.
Well, Richard,
it's too much.
Yeah, Richard, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I want to take what you say and turn it back to our panel. And thank you so much for your call. Paula Reed, what do you think?
Well, it's never good when your attorneys have armies of attorneys and one of your personal attorneys is in prison and the other one is under investigation in the same district and possibly headed there. Look, the president, he plays at the edges of executive power, which is unique only to him. But then when it comes to the everyday activity and laws we're supposed to abide by, there are a lot of people who have testified under oath and provided evidence that perhaps the president, when he in his civilian life and in his current life, has not always abided by the law. So far, he's not been charged with anything, important to note, but special counsel couldn't clear him on obstruction of justice. And just, you know, minutes, it seemed, after one investigation into possibly colluding with a foreign government over an election ended, we have another one. And this time it's impeachment. I mean, there's a lot of smoke here if there's no fire. But you have to look at the people the president surrounds himself with, all the legal entanglements they have found themselves in. And at the end of the day, I think in covering this president, one of the things I think is really important is who the president surrounds himself with. Because it's often lawyers, everybody likes to dump on lawyers, who have helped indulge the president's worst instincts, be it Michael Cohen or Rudy Giuliani. But it's also folks like Don McGahn who have stopped the president from acting on his impulses, from firing the special counsel. And if people have concerns about whether President Trump obeys the law, look really closely to who he has around him as he goes into 2020. And if you think he has a team of people around him who can help channel his instincts to more constructive ends.
Okay, so on that point, Paula, Emma, I want to play a moment from an interview with former UN ambassador Nikki Haley, right? Because she has her this new book out, in which she recounts her experience within the Trump administration. The book is called With All Due Respect, and in it she describes a meeting with then White House Chief of Staff John Kelly and then Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. She writes that they said they were resisting the president to, quote, save the country. That's according to Nikki Haley, and she told more to CBS's Nora O'Donnell.
They should have been saying that to the president, not asking me to join them on their sidebar plan. It should have been, go tell the president what your differences are and quit if you don't like what he's doing. But to undermine a president is really a very dangerous thing. And it goes against the Constitution and it goes against what the American people want. And it was offensive.
Now, Emma, you covered South Carolina politics for quite a while, including then Governor Nikki Haley. What do you make of her, you know, and her the defense that she's been mounting for the president over the weekend?
The interesting thing about what Nikki Haley has written, and I haven't read the book yet. I'm eager to, as a former South Carolina correspondent and follower of Nikki Haley. What's interesting about what she's saying and how she's positioned herself here is, unlike Rex Tillerson, unlike John Kelly, Nikki Haley came into the Trump administration as a politician, an elected official, and someone with political aspirations within the Republican Party. Nikki Haley had a great setup. She was based in New York City in the United Nations. She was away from the noise of Washington, D.C. at the same time. She was able to maneuver a seat for herself in the cabinet. She was able to make the U.N. ambassadorship a cabinet-level position, which has not been typically the case within Republican administrations. So she had this power, this clout, this influence within the Trump administration, within Trump's inner circle. But she was based in New York, where she could kind of do her own thing and carve out this really incredible niche for herself as this this forceful advocate for United States interests. Nikki Haley is widely considered a presidential candidate in 2024. She is clearly paving the way for herself to have some sort of political future, even though she's now in a private citizen. She's touting this book, and she is positioning herself as someone who can work within the system. Someone who's a team player, someone who speaks with moral clarity about how you navigate contentious situations with colleagues within the party, and standing up for President Trump, who remains popular among Republican voters. So she's being very savvy, and I think that. You know, it's not demeaning to say that she's playing it very politically astute, and that her ambitions are showing here very clearly.
Well, so let's listen to what Nikki Haley said again to CBS's Nora O'Donnell. I mean, trying to position herself as both politically astute and with moral clarity in this moment, it's pretty difficult balancing acts. Because here's what she said regarding her thoughts on the impeachment inquiry.
You're going to impeach a president for asking for a favor that didn't happen and giving money and it wasn't withheld. I don't know what you would impeach him on. I mean, look, Nora, impeachment is like the death penalty for a public official. When you look at the transcript, there's nothing in that transcript that warrants the death penalty for the president.
Paula Reid, a favor that didn't happen and money that wasn't withheld. But it was withheld for a long, long time until the whistleblower filed their report. I mean, this is another one of the versions of the defenses that we're seeing being built around the president here. What do you take of Nikki Haley's take?
Look, intelligent minds, I think, can disagree about whether pressuring Ukraine to investigate a political rival and then possibly covering it up in the midst of a larger campaign by your personal attorney to pursue your political ends, whether that rises to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors. That's something for lawmakers. But here it's clear. Nikki Haley is talking, it sounds to me, to an audience of one. And many people do this. She wants the president to hear her being on his side, defending him against this. She's trying to walk this line by not ignoring the evidence, but saying, oh, it doesn't quite meet the standard. As you have laid out, she's being very politically savvy here. She's laying groundwork for something in the future. Some folks, though it appears to be speculation, have suggested that the president could add her to the ticket instead of Mike Pence. That's something that's been floating around for a year. It doesn't look like that'll actually happen. But this interview definitely re-upped a lot of those questions about her political future.
Okay, let's go to Constantine, who's calling from Westbrook, Maine. Constantine, you're on the air.
Hi, Megan. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I appreciate that people ask me that, but I think it's more sort of how are we doing as a nation? That's really the question. Go ahead, Constantine.
Well, that's a good point. Well, I admire the integrity and the character of the previous caller, Richard. And he is right that Trump has been, rather nefarious most of his life. But I'm going to fast forward to the end of the movie for everybody here. And it's simply thus. The House is going to impeach him, and 20 GOP senators that have to run in 2020, and the last time I looked, they really, really like their jobs. So to get him to do that, we have a saying in Maine, that's like he's got a snowball's chance in hell. So they won't convict, and all of this will just go away.
And so are you saying that it shouldn't happen? What are you saying, Constantine?
I think it's a waste of time, effort, and money. Because it's a foregone conclusion. You're asking 20 GOP senators to put, their power and position and jobs on the line for this guy, and they're going to do it.
Okay.
I mean, they want to keep their job.
So then, does that mean that you think that unless the sort of political balances or the political scales are tipped in a certain way in Congress, that impeachment hearings ought to never go forward?
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying in this particular instance, because of the factionalization of the political process, that it essentially is a foregone conclusion. Because when you have Lindsey Graham and other GOP bootlickers saying, I'm not even going to look at the evidence. I mean, what do you say to that? You know what's going to happen. Mm. I mean, it's going to be a big, dog and pony show. And then basically, just like the Mueller report, Mueller said on TV, he could be indicted when he leaves office. So that's another reason why Trump has to run, because he has to run up the clock on the obstruction of justice charges that he's facing.
Yeah. Constantine, thank you for your call. Emma Dumaine, this is something that we hear quite often, right, that there's a presumption of what the conclusion of this process might be. But is it possible that sometimes the process is the point?
Yeah. I think that, Constantine is right that this is a political exercise. It is absolutely a political exercise, whether Democrats or Republicans will admit that or not. The House will impeach because the majority of members are Democrats, and the majority of Democrats have said that, they would vote to impeach. They would support an impeachment inquiry, which leads one to believe that they would vote for articles of impeachment. The Senate is run by Republicans who support the president. And he's right. Many have said that they will not participate in what they're calling a sham process. And yeah, people like Lindsey Graham say, I'm not going to read the testimony. I'm not going to watch the public hearings because I'm not going to put my hands in what I believe is a tainted process, so they say. The process is the point for Democrats who want to show their voters, their constituency ahead of an election year that they are standing up to this president, that they believe he did something wrong, and they are rising to that occasion. And Republicans are going to show that they are going to defend their president. And even if they don't like what he did, I think that this was a point that, Nikki Haley was making too, being, elections have consequences. You don't like it, you wait for the 2020 election and you vote him out. But, I think, we're all
we're all interested in seeing which Democrats side with Republicans and which Republicans side with Democrats on the on these votes. We are all expecting it to be predominantly, overwhelmingly party line in both chambers.
Let's take one more call here. Let's go to Mark, who's calling from Bloomer, Wisconsin. Mark, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd just like to say, as far as these hearings, you know, being public now, I don't see anything coming out of this. I mean, it's nothing different than what was done in private. I mean, the Democrats, their control of who get what witnesses can be called on either side. So until I see people like the whistleblower or Adam Schiff, who actually, this is where it all began, testify in front of, you know, everybody, I'm holding my judgment on this whole impeachment thing. I don't see it going anywhere. Democrats just aren't going to let Republicans call any witness they want, which so far I haven't heard anybody that's got direct knowledge of what he did. I mean, it's all second, third, fourth hand accounts. I'm holding judgment until I see these hearings, which I don't believe are going to accomplish anything.
Mark, thank you so much for your call. Just at one point, though, we do have depositions from people who were listening in directly on that infamous July phone call that the president had with the president of Ukraine. We, as Paula said a little earlier, we don't yet know if those folks will be participating in these public hearings yet. But Mark, thank you so much for your call. Paula, we've just got a minute left to go here, and there's one other sort of part of this that we haven't touched on yet, and that is that a federal judge is going to be hearing, I believe, today, this case that may determine whether senior White House aides will be compelled to appear before the House committee. Tell us a little bit more about that.
There's a lot riding on this case. The question is, do you have to comply with a congressional subpoena if the White House tells you not to? It's a simplified version of what this judge is examining, because there are White House officials who have been subpoenaed or who may be subpoenaed, but they have been told by the White House that they're not supposed to comply. So the judge has to sort this out. And there are several different officials who have said, including John Bolton, who said that depending on which way this case goes, they will comply. They'll follow what this judge orders. But there are concerns that it may take quite a while for this case to reach its final destination, which could be the Supreme Court. It could stop at the appellate level. It's unclear. But to reach its final court and get a final answer, it may not happen soon enough for Democrats to be able to call some of the witnesses who they would like to hear from. But some real key folks here in who are involved in this, including one of the White House attorneys who allegedly moved or directed people to move this transcript into a secure server. All these folks have said that they will testify if the judge says they can override objections by the White House. So a lot riding on that case. It's just not clear when we're going to get an answer.
Yeah, and I see that Acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney is moving to join this particular lawsuit as well, right?
Yes, he is. Although there are some questions about his motives and why exactly he's doing that. John Bolton and some of the other folks who are represented in this case are not terribly happy about that.
Well, Paula Reed, CBS News correspondent covering the Justice Department, the White House, and legal affairs. Paula, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Emma Dumain covers Congress and congressional leadership for McClatchy. Emma, it was great to have you. Thank you.
It was great being here. Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.